Jim, I understand we're the number one on Apple Podcasts. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. We're right ahead of Joe Rogan.
Joe Rogan, okay. Who's he play for?
Yeah, pretty exciting. So, you know, we did a Twitter the other day, Dad, that your dogs got sprayed by skunks.
Yep.
And we had 1,300 people write in about how to get rid of skunks.
What was the best one? What was the best?
Everyone seemed hydrogen peroxide, dish soap, and baking soda.
Oh, that sounds pretty good. I think we didn't know that stuff. Baking soda and peroxide, eh? Where you mix them together?
Yeah, it looks like you mix them together and wash the dogs.
You're going to have to keep away from their eyes and that, everything, I would imagine.
I would think.
But I remember you and I were talking about when my first blue, the one you saw on the opening in that, boy, oh boy, was she tough. She got entangled with a skunk. It was so bad, the stuff, it wasn't sprayed on, it was dripping off her. And I remember they fell down a well, like, you know, like, not a well, but, you know.
Like a window well.
Window well down there. And it was unbelievable. And you talk about a skunk. Skunks are a pretty good size. This was a monster. And in fact, when I had to reach over and pull her out, and I went down the basement to look at the skunk, and it was trying to get through the window after me. I had a head, couldn't believe it. So, and it was so powerful, the smell was so powerful, that it sprayed a door that was steel. And it took the paint. I never forget it, to peel the paint off. You could smell the outside of our house for a year out off from the road. It was terrible. Anyhow, I remember it was dripping off her, literally dripping off her. And she was being sick to the front, being sick to the back, if you know what I mean. And I had a paper. I couldn't put towels because it was just too much. So I put towel, and I never forgot when I threw the towel away, and I looked over, and there she was. I mean, and she looked up, looked like a skunk coming up, you know, the wind got it. And she said, all right, that's number one. Let's go at it again. Boy, she was a tough dog.
Yeah, I remember that. Like, when they fell into the window well, it sprayed the screen. And it instantly dissolved the screen.
Didn't even smell like a skunk.
No,
it was
beyond skunk. We had to throw out all our ice cube trays, all our plastic cups, because it was, you couldn't believe, like, as I say, it went beyond the skunk smell. It was just...
Anyhow, peroxide and baking soda, don't let it get in the eyes.
That's what they say. So we're going to talk a little bit about what's going around in the NHL.
Well, so, I have to say something about Brendan Lemieux. I mean... How Saturday night? How in the world do the Canadians be winning? Four nothing, and they lose 6-5. Brendan Lemieux, he got two goals. He got six shots. Imagine he had six shots. This guy must have poured him right on there. And I remember who was he playing for?
When he was 15, he was playing for the Toronto Red Wings in the GTHL.
And I remember his dad Claude, and you. We used to have little fights going on all the time on TV and everything. And he was the assistant coach. And I remember that game. I remember Brendan. He plays just the same, banging around and smashing it. By the way, he's got a big black eye. For you people that saw him with the big black eye, that was fighting for Tom Wilson. So he doesn't pick on any lightweights. Right off the bat, he goes after Tom Wilson. You don't push New York Rangers around anymore. And I remember that game. And he got thrown out of the game. And so he got thrown out of the game and everything. And the referees, I think, just wanted to get him out of the game. And who do I meet coming around with Claude? We would come around a corner. And, boy, so I had to say something. Well, that was some penalty that Brendan got. And he went in a tirade about the whole thing. But I'll tell you one thing, boy. I met him when he was with Winnipeg. I remember when he was playing for the Moosehead. And I remember Ron and I walked in the back. And we thought they were getting ready for the playoffs. And the guy was taping the sticks and putting the bags, you know, and all that. He says, no, we just got beat out of the playoffs. So I remember him, boy. You're going to hear a lot more about Brendan Lemieux.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember. He played just like his dad when he was a minor midget. And so what else caught your eye, Dad?
Well, let's talk about Andy Frost. He must be so proud. Morgan, his son, got his first goal for the Flyers. And imagine doing all the games with the Leafs, and he got this first goal. How proud he must be! Jack Eichel for Buffalo. You got to admit, boy, he is. I mean, a lot of guys would quit. He's a first round draft choice, and you know he sees McDavid doing unbelievable and everything. He got a lot of goals. And I mean, you know, he has a great fight too. I mean, he dropped the gloves, you know, frustration, eh? That is, and he's so mad because the referee only gave him 4 minutes. It must be so bad. But McDavid, I mentioned McDavid. I mean, yeah, come on. Holy smokes. What has he got? 6 games? He's got 18 points? I mean, this guy is, he's the best hockey player in the world. Crosby's out now. But you see this guy play. He dominates the game like Bobby Orr. I mean, you can't take your eyes off the guy. And he plays reckless, though. He plays a reckless game. That's why he's so good. He does things that I never see anybody else doing.
Do you remember the first time we saw him?
Yeah, I remember the first time we saw him. He's playing for Marlies.
Yep.
And he come up with, who was the defenseman he come up with?
Roland McEwen. They were, Connor would have been 13, and he was playing against 15-year-olds, and Roland was 14 playing against 15.
And boy, were they dynamite. I remember, I think he got a couple of goals or something. They won 3-2. I said, boy, we better keep our eye on that guy.
Yeah.
But he plays reckless, and I love the way he plays, and that's the way he is. And I mentioned it to Bobby Orr. I said, Bobby plays something like you, reckless. And he says, can't change his style. That's the way he plays.
So we're a quarter of the way through the season, which is hard to believe. And so far, they said there's
a lot of things have happened this year.
Yes. So far, there's been 66 third period comebacks, and a lot of those had the goalie pulled. When did you like pulling your goalie?
You know, it's a funny thing. When it got around 1:30, I liked to have our goalie out by 1:30 if he was coming out. And, you know, but, you know, I see now Patrick Roy was the first guy, Patrick Waugh. We won't say Patrick Roy, Patrick Waugh, whatever it is. And he was the guy when he was in Colorado. He was the first guy to pull him. And if he was behind, I think he was pulling him at 2 minutes, two and a half minutes. And if he was behind 2 goals, he'd pull the goalie with 4 minutes, which made sense. I think if I had to do over again now, I would have pulled a goalie at two, about 2 minutes to go. And I think that's the right time. You know, what they do is, what really makes me laugh, is they get the puck, you know, dirt, you know, when the game's on and everything, and they get the, and they fool around the blue line, they fool around the red line. But when they really want to score the goal, when they want to get, you know, they only got a minute and a half to go, they dump it in. You don't believe me? Watch the next game. As soon as they get the red line, they dump it in, and then they go. That's the way we used to play all the time. So I if I had my dothers to go, whatever they call it, I would pull a goalie about 2 minutes, and I would do what Patrick Roy did. When he was behind 2 goals, he'd pull him with 4 minutes. I see where Patrick Kane is leading Chicago again. He's got 11 goals. And I remember the very first time on Hockey Night in Canada, we brought all the prospects, the heavy-duty prospects. They came to the game in the morning, and they did us first. We did an interview, and then they met all the players. I think it was a good idea the way the NHL did it, that they meet all the stars and everything like that. And they went in the dressing room. It was in the playoffs. But I remember the first time I saw him, I said, what are they bringing one of the stick boys up? He was the smallest guy I ever saw. But I saw what a big heart that guy has. Every year he leads the league. You know, Tim, when I look back at last year, and I think of the big fight they had with, is he going to leave Columbus? Bobrovsky. I think that's how you pronounce
Bobrovsky.
It. Something like that. And he was a goaltender. He was really good in Columbus. And who would have thought that Florida paid all that money for him, expecting, well, we don't have to worry about the goaltending. Lalonde's retired. We've got the Bobrovsky, 882. Boy, that must kill them when they think of all the money they're paying. And, you know, we have to say one more thing about Marchand. I mean, this guy is unbelievable. I think he's got 13 goals. He's got 32 points. He's plus 11. But here's the best. He's got over 40 minutes in penalties. This guy is this guy, they call him the pest. He's more than a pest. He's a real hockey player. I think he should be up for the MVP.
Washington's Garnet Hathaway, he got a 3-game suspension for spitting at your buddy Erica Branson. He lost.
I just can't believe a guy would spit. I mean, you got to be pretty mad to be spitting. I mean, that's a, I mean, I you know, 3 games for spitting when you think a thing is going on, but you just don't do that in hockey.
Yeah. And did anybody, when you've gotten a lot of fights, did anybody, nobody spit at you when you were in a fight?
You know, I've been in a few fights, and one of the ones I think, it was only one I really got clocked a few times around the eyes. This kind of scared me. But the one that really, I always remembered, it was fighting this guy, and he was on his, I don't know what happened. He was on his knees. I guess I knocked him down on his knees. And somehow or other, as I went to grab him, my thumb went in his mouth. And this guy was so terrified or so excited, he was grinding my, and he cut, I could knew he was down to the bone, and he was so excited. I said, he's gonna bite my thumb off. I mean, he was down to the bone, and it sounds terrible, but it's true. And I thought, well, I have to take the bull by the horns. I have to pull my thumb out along his teeth. Sounds terrible, doesn't it? And I said, well, if I don't, he's gonna bite my thumb off. I pulled, and luckily for me, he had his teeth knocked out in the front. Boy, I tell you, once I got my hand out, remember he had long hair, and this was before they had the rule that you couldn't grab the hair. I grabbed him by the hair. He paid the price like that. But that's the one thing. But I never had anybody ever spit on me, and believe me, and I know he regrets that spitting. You get 3 games, you deserve it. You know, I have to say something about Toronto Maple Leafs. I mean, I have to say something again about Anderson. I know I'm not on television, but this guy is the best goaltender in the world. There is nobody that does as good as this guy. I mean, the Leafs won the game. Listen, I'm happy they win their second game. They had 3 shots on net, and then this guy bails them out. There's no goaltender in the world has one-on-one, I call cold turkey shots like that, and he holds them in there. And he holds them in there, then they score a goal. He, without a doubt, is the best goaltender in the world. There's no doubt about it, that one. You know, when I look over at the stats, I feel all the stats of all the Leafs pretty good because I'm a Leaf fan. He has to work on is Matthews. I know he's a golden boy and everything, but he has to work on the draws. I think he won one draw out of 10 or something like that. You cannot win constantly, and you will not win in the playoffs if unless you have the puck. He's got to win them. But I remember Keith, he wins his first game. You have to, when you're a coach, you have to win that first game because you get a good feel. Everybody gets a good feel. And I remember my very first game was in Buffalo. And, you know, the Stanley Cup champions, finalists. And I have Jilly Gilbert in net. And I think, well, we're not bad. We had a sort of a mediocre training camp. You could have had Mickey Mouse behind the bench the first year I was there. I didn't do a good job at all. So anyhow, we're in Buffalo. We open up in Buffalo, and we got hammered. I forget what it was.
9-5.
Isn't that awful? And I just can't believe it. I'm stunned, and everybody's stunned. 9-5. So I used to sit behind the bus at the back of the bus. And I never did it again after this thing. And I heard Jillian on the phone, well, that is it. I am finished for the year, my average. Holy smokes, I'm a rookie coach. And my goalie says, I'll see you later. But we did all right. And they said, wait till the bell rings, Don. Wait till the bell rings. We'll be there. And the bell rang, and we were out. Chicago put us out. But I tell you, boy, all that summer, when I was there, I had that out by the Who, I think it was the Who, wasn't it? Won't Get Fooled Again?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I played that over and over and over again. And I remember we had a meeting, Harry Sinn and I had a meeting. It was a little wee place. And he says, look, if you don't win, he says, we'll both be gone. Use me as a heavy. And unfortunately, I used him as a pretty good heavy. And from then on, first place. And we were a tough team to play. We were the toughest team, maybe the toughest team in sports after that. But I always remembered that first game, 9-5. I thought, my world is crashing down.
So, Dad, like we were saying, we're going to be taking clips from the Grapevine shows. And one of the first guests I think we had was Terry O'Reilly. And he was, if there was a guy who was a Bruin, it was Terry O'Reilly.
With the name Terry O'Reilly, I think that's why they drafted him for all the Irish guys in South Boston, because I remember when I was with Rochester Americans, I was coaching, and I saw this guy, number one draft choice. He could not stand up. He literally was the worst skater I've ever seen in professional hockey. I remember falling down on the corner and everything. And then the next year, I saw him. it was like a miracle. He could skate. Well, he wasn't that great a skater, but he could, at least he could stand up, and boy, was he tough. And he went in the corners. You went in the corner with him. You paid the price. And all the players used to call him Taz, from the Tasmanian devil. And let me tell you, I remember Peter McNabb, they asked Peter McDonald, he said, how do you play with Terry? He says, I don't know where he's going. It must be on the other club. We don't know where he's going. Neither does the other club. And he was a tough guy to play against, boy. You go in the corner with Terry O'Reilly, you paid the price. But you know what? He's the only guy I could not get to cover the points. Don't ask me why. He wouldn't cover the points. And when he was on for a goal, and he didn't cover the points, and it came from the points, you never confronted him. Anyhow, he led us in the scoring. Not only that, he had 15 majors for fighting.
That was his best year. He had 29 goals, 61 assists, 90 points, and he was, I only think this happened a couple of times, that he led the team in points and penalties, and he was plus 40.
How much? What he was? Plus 40?
Plus 40.
Holy smokes. I didn't know he was that good. Anyhow, you could not confront him. When he made a mistake, you did not go in the restroom like the rest of the guys. Give him the heck out of it. Because if you did, I never did it because I knew, don't do it. But my big thing back then was cover the points. No shots from the points. I did not want shots from the point. But Terry, he would not cover the point. And I remember, he'd be in the corner shaking hands with the defenseman. The puck would go to his point in the net. So I didn't want to confront him because I knew I'd be in deep trouble. So on the bench, he'd be on the bench. And this is how I do it. Well, the rest of us cover the points, but not Terry. Terry knows more than the coach. And I go up and down like that. Yeah, Terry doesn't cover the points. Their goals will go in from the butt. And that's the way you do it, because if you ever confronted him, look out. And a few years later, he told me, about 10 years later, he told me when I'd go into that act, I guess, of saying, no, we cover the points, but not Terry. He said he used to take his gloves off and he'd hold his pants. He didn't want to get up because he said, if I get up, I'm decking you right there. And I knew he would, but I knew how to handle this guy. He was the best. Terry O'Reilly, the Boston Strong Boy.
So we have a clip of him talking about coming up, Dan Maloney, and he called Black Tuesdays.
You remember how you used to tap guys on the this used to bug me more than anything. I first went there, used to tap guys on the shoulder, turn the guy around, let the guy take the first shot. He'd win, but we'd get an extra 2 minutes all the time. Do you remember how? I said, someday you're going to be sorry doing that. And remember what happened in L.A.?
Dan Maloney clocked me. Boy, did he. I hit Butch Goring. He's not a real big guy, but I hit him clean check as the whistle went. Butch was cutting across the blue line. It was offside, and I smacked into him on the whistle. And I thought nothing of it. I didn't feel bad about the play. And I saw Dan Maloney skating towards me, and he was talking to me. And what he was saying was, you touch him, and I'm going to kill you. Well, I didn't know what he was saying. I leaned forward.
What did you say?
I said, bang. he rocked me. I couldn't see, after the first one, he hit me right in the nose, and the swelling still hasn't gone down.
Yeah, still hasn't improved. Yeah. Remember the tears rolling down, but I never forget that. After that, I had no problem with him tapping guys in the shoulder. When you practiced, I always felt that when you went into practice for all the young guys, they asked me, how can the Bruins go? I always thought you set the pace all the time. Did you mean to do that, or is it just natural?
I never thought of that until you mentioned it. I've always felt that going into a game, if I haven't worked my brains out in practice for 2 or 3 days before that, I never had a real good feeling going into the game. So working hard in practice was very important. But I think the thing that kept us going, the thing that gave us the stamina, and I don't know if you realize this or not, when you were coaching, remember what you called Black Tuesdays? I don't know if you called it that. We called it Black Tuesdays. We would play on the weekends. We'd play Saturday and Sunday usually. And then Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday were practice days. And then we'd start again Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday. And so sometimes Monday would be an optional, depending on how we did on Saturday and Sunday. Then Tuesday would be Black Tuesday. And I mean, when you got off the ice, you're almost physically sick, you know, over and backs, ups and downs. And that's that when we went into the game Thursday and started our weekly games, everybody on our team knew that we could go one step, like maybe it was just a psychological thing, but we knew that we could go one step further than the guy across from us because we'd worked harder during the week.
You know, that was a pretty good version of the fight and all that stuff that Terry told and everything, but this is how I remember it. I used to talk to him all the time, say, Terry, I don't mind you being fair, but quit tapping the guy on the shoulder because someday the guy's going to turn around and drill you. And so he kept tapping guys on the shoulder. And one day he tapped another Irishman on the shoulder called Dan Maloney. And he just turned around and clocked him like you couldn't believe. I broke his nose and blood's all over the place. And guys didn't kid him, don't say anything, because he grabbed you. Next game, this is how I remember it. Dan was in Detroit and he grabbed Dan. And you couldn't believe the fight he had against Dan. It was
it was 19 seconds into the game.
Was it 19 seconds?
19 seconds.
I don't remember. All I remember is the fight. And he was a tough guy. I mean, you couldn't, as long as you didn't embarrass him, that was a big thing. If you were fair, you were fair. And I remember another time, there was a great big guy. I forget his name. He's a Polish guy or something like that. I forget his name. He grabbed Terry and he wouldn't fight. But he held both of his arms, and it was embarrassing to watch them.
That was in Atlanta. There was a big brawl at the end of the game, at the end of the period.
I remember the only thing I remember is Terry being embarrassed, and that's So the next time is in Boston. We play them about 10 days later. It was in Boston, and this guy I knew Terry never said anything, and this guy was cutting along our blue line. He cut into the trolley tracks. And Terry hit him. I mean, it was one of those crack. You could hear the crack. And I think, oh, boy. And the guy lay there, and he was in convulsions. I mean, the guy was in convulsions. So Terry is standing at the end of the bench, our bench, just standing there, leaning on a stick, looking out at this guy flopping around and everything. And, geez, I thought the guy was going to die or something like that. So I went down, and I put my hand on Terry's shoulder, and I said, Terry, I said, don't worry. I think he's going to be all right. He very calmly, he turned around and very quietly says, I really don't give a if he dies. I looked at him like that.
But one story you tell is pretty funny was when with Dan Maloney, there was a fight at Boston, and Dan used to wear a big helmet.
Oh, yeah.
And it was there was a big fight right in front of the Bruins bench.
I thought that this was funny. And it was the one time I really broke up on the bench. Dan used to wear a great big helmet, big bubble helmet. And if you wore a bubble helmet, I used to give you a trouble helmet all the time. I used to give you a hard time all the time. So there was a fight right in front of our bench, like you said, and right up against the boards. And Dan, where are you with your big helmet? And he very calmly turned to me while the fight is going on. Grapes. Give it a rest. Well, I just broke up. And I guess it was in the moment of truth on the bench. Something like that happens. You just break up when something like that happens.
So, Dad, in the clip, Terry talked about during practice that on Tuesdays, the players used to call it Black Tuesday. So what he kind of went into a little bit of it, but what was a Black Tuesday?
Well, I picked that up when I was playing from Joe Crozier. Like, he'd give us a day off. And in the American Hockey League, when you played Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and you give Monday off, but Tuesday you always paid the price. Nothing like the Bruins. I remember we used to go back and forth, and then we do stops and starts, which they don't do anymore. You all get all the team gets at center ice, and the coach has a whistle, and he goes tweet, tweet, and they go back and forth, and they stop. On both feet. No, they don't stop on one feet and turn back. Tweet, 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 tweet. And it was, I mean, they don't do that anymore. I see they don't do that anymore. But that stops and starts. And then they get on the side. And I used to, I did it so hard one day that Donnie Marcotte, the best skater on the club, I said, we can't do it anymore. Oh, and I have to tell you one more. When we used to get guys that came from other clubs. And as you know, the rinks are oval, as they say. And the guys that wanted to cheat always got on the far end of the corner. I used to go to them and said, who the, you think you're kidding? I said, I used to do what you're doing. So the Black Tuesdays, they paid the price, and I really didn't know that Terry felt that way or the players felt that way. I just knew they had to be driven. They had the day off. Now they're going to pay the price.
Like how long would they go back and forth?
I would say they go back and forth 15 to 20 minutes after practice. So
they would have a full practice.
We have a full practice. We'd have the thing. I never had long practices. I'd only have an hour and 10 minutes, and then they'd get on the side. And they knew what was coming. And the funny thing is, nobody ever complained. Nobody, you know, I was pretty close to the guys. And I same thing as when I was playing. I didn't mind being driven. I knew it was for you, but you have to be driven. You can't, when you're alone or doing that, you have to be driven like that. But I remember, the one thing I remember about that is Donnie Marcotte was at the end, is we just can't go anymore.
I remember, was the bull gang came to you and complained because they were going back and forth on the boards and they were stopping so much that it shaved the ice right down almost to the cement.
No, that was in the playoffs. And what happened was, Harry, I'd have the six guys that were black aces, as they say. I used to be on the ice with them. I used to be, and you know, there was another thing I used to do. I used to stay on the ice with the black aces, as they were called. They were the spares. They were the guys that were going to fill in. And I said, you're going to play your game in the morning. And we used to go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And they used to be dead. And then we'd go for lunch after. And I'd buy them lunch. I was a great guy. I sound like a great guy. Anyhow, Harry showed me a letter from the league. And we were doing it so much back and forth that we shaved the ice down that they had to build it up. So we worked harder than anybody in the games. And we worked harder than anybody in practice. Well, Tim, I guess they're going pretty good. What are we, number one? What was it?
Number one on Apple Podcasts. So we're on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Facebook, and soon to be YouTube.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know that. Anyhow, next week, we're going to have King Clancy on, one of my favorites. I think the National Hockey League has a humanitarian award or something for King Clancy. I mean, he was a great guy. He was a little Irish guy. He was traded. We'll tell the whole story next week. But he tells the story of the time he was on the ice when Ace Bailey was almost killed by Eddie Shore. It was between Toronto and Boston. That will be interesting, I'll tell you. And also, I hear from people, and we've heard from people, they want to hear more from the Darth Vader of hockey, Eddie Shore. I'll tell some stories about Eddie Shore. I know you won't believe them, but it's true.